welcome to this week's edition of A Degree of Interest with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week is Dr. Mario Casal. Now, you're the Deputy Director of the Marketing and Communications aspect of university, and you're also head in charge of student recruitment. How do you recruit students?
Well, first of all, thanks for inviting me, Monique, for your interesting program. Well, it is a quite a complex process, to put it this way, because as you know, Malta is a small island in the middle of the Mediterranean, and although most of the European countries would have heard about Malta, it is not the same thing when you go to countries which are not in Europe or close to Malta. So first, you have to sell Malta. So you say, we have an island, it's in the middle of the Mediterranean, and on this very small island we have a university. I mean, traditionally, University of Malta, we have been around since the 1592, we trace our origins in the 1592 in Valletta as a Collegium Militensia. We never really bothered because to recruit international students, because we were the only university on the island for all this time, catering for the needs of the nation. But then what was happening is, since we teach in English, and since the numbers at the university started to increase, and we also joined the European Union as a country, we attracted the attention of several international students out there who said, why not Malta? Malta is an interesting place. You can go, the degrees are recognized, and at the same time you're studying a degree in English. And I think that is what kicked off the interest as a university to start attracting international students, because we saw that there is potential. Nowadays, how do we recruit students? And we recruit students through several channels. First of all, you have students who are coming from the European Union, because it's not just non-EU students. There are students who have heard about Malta. They think Malta is a cool place, and to come and study here. For some of them, it's free as well, especially if it's at undergrad level for European Union students, and so they come to Malta. Most of these students, they find us through our online efforts. We are very active on online channels like social media, Google Ads. We do our utmost to reach out to these students. And then also for the non-European students, they can also find about us through online channels, because we are active in these countries as well. But also we have a number of what we call agents or representatives who recruit students from overseas on our behalf. Obviously, communication in this regard is key. So we have to be in constant communication with your representatives. You have to inform them about the courses that we are offering, if there are new courses, if there are any changes in the entry requirements. And we have a network, which slowly this network is growing. And through this network we manage to also attract a good number of students. And then also there is the word of mouth. And I believe that in education, as in most cases I would say, word of mouth is the best. I mean, nothing beats word of mouth. If a student hears about this university from another student, or, which is even stronger as an impact, from an academic, most probably the student would end up enrolling at this university, if this student obviously is qualified to do so. So essentially, those are our main channels. Obviously, when I say online, it's not just social media and Google Ads. We have several portals where we are actively present there and communicating with students. And again, as I said, I mean, I do believe in this. I would attribute the success we've managed to do in the last few years to the good communication that we have with students. We try to get back to students in a timely manner, in a very short time, possibly in 24 hours, That is something that we try to do, and I believe that helps a lot.
So, what countries are the most common, and has that changed over time with students coming in?
Yes, the most common, I would say, if you look at the students, the international students that we have, that amount, approximately 11% of our students on campus are international students. Half of them, more or less, give and take, would come from European Union countries. As the most popular, I would say, Italy, it's a popular country, and also UK used to be a very, very popular country. Malta was a very popular destination for British students. We attribute it to I mean, because even if you look at the website, if you look at the analytics of the website, you realize that traditionally we have attracted attention to British and Italian students. And we attribute that to the fact of geographical proximity. We're very close to Italy. And as well to UK, because Malta and UK, they have traditionally, Malta was under the British rule for a long time. So there's still this connection. However, recently, we have experienced and we have observed several changes in this pattern. We still do get a lot of students from Italy and European Union countries, neighboring European countries, but now we're seeing a significant increase from India, for example. We're getting more Chinese students every year, and we have a structure for Chinese students or any other students coming from where there are 12 years of education, not 13 years of education. I will explain the difference as well. We are also seeing an increase from Japanese students, South Korean students. These are all emerging markets for us that we are following closely. And then obviously we have several students, as I said, from
the rest of Europe, that sort of that our most common neighbors and things.
Yes. But also North African students.
Okay.
North African students. What I can say is about North Africa is, especially for example, Tunisia. When they hear about Malta, they are very interested. I mean, we are very close to each other culturally. Even the language sounds similar. The Maltese sounds similar to their language, and for them, sometimes it makes sense sending their kids here to study at University of Malta, rather than sending them to UK, which is far away from Tunisia. I mean, Tunisia and Malta are very close to each other, you know?
And the same temperature.
And the same temperature, and the same everything. I mean, we're very close to each other. So, yes, unfortunately, the problem with these students is it's funding. So we do fund some students, I mean, not through the university, but we, whenever there is a scholarship, we try and encourage through obviously the help from the embassy to promote these scholarships, and we do attract students from these countries as well. But mostly those are the trends. I mean, we have similar to other institutions, not just in Malta. We have seen a surge from India and from China and from Japan.
And that's purely, like you said, from these online marketing and these relationships. Is there something different you tell them? Is there what's their attraction to come to Malta, for example, for a Japanese or a Korean student?
Well, for a Japanese student is that, first of all, this is something else to worth mentioning. Japanese, for example, they don't have an issue with visa. I mean, because this is sometimes one of the problems that we encounter. I mean, like, for example, the Nigerian market is a huge market. And for several universities, it's low-hanging fruits because, unfortunately, for the Nigerians, they don't have enough spaces at their university, so they have to go overseas if they would like to study. Funding remains an issue with the Nigerian students, but not just that. There's also the issue of visa. Getting a visa from Nigeria, for example, to come to Malta, it's very difficult. So for students, it's if not difficult, sometimes it's even impossible for them because they keep sending them from one place to another. Unfortunately, we don't have an embassy in these countries, and that makes a difference. like when you say Japan, the reason is for them it's very easy because they don't require a visa to enter here in the first place. Most of the Japanese students, they come to Malta to study English, and then they proceed to university, and that helps as well. So there is this idea of continuation, that they come to study English and then they proceed to university. But what attracts them, I mean, from and I say this from the experience and encounters that I have with students, is that Malta is a safe country. Mm-hmm. Although we don't have the same religious traditions as they do, they like it. They like the fact that Malta, there are churches everywhere. It makes them feel safer for them. I think it's a cultural thing. I don't know. The language and something else that attracts them is the Schengen visa, because when a student comes to Malta and gets a residence permit to stay in Malta, technically, that is a residence permit. That residence permit would give access to the student to travel in the Schengen area.
So they can take midterm breaks and weekends and things in other countries and really make the most of the opportunity that they have.
Yeah. A country that I haven't mentioned, and it's also we're seeing an increase from this country. It's Northern America, Canada and US.
Okay.
So we do have certain courses that since the year we have offered them, they also attract we have these courses which attract American students. Like, for example, we have one in conflict resolution, which is a dual degree with George Mason University. And in that case, we attract American students to study in Malta and didn't get an American degree and the University of Malta degree.
Ah, that's smart.
Yeah, so yes, we have seen that. And for the American students, if you ask them why you come to Malta, they say because we can travel in the Schengen area, as I said. The weather is another thing. Culture, they love our culture. And the fact that what impresses them is that Malta is such a small island, and at the same time it's a state, it's an independent state. So we function as a state, no? And we have a university on such a small island. And we do have all the services that you can think of. And I think these are things that we underestimate. I mean, I remember a particular student who was a mature student. He told me, you know what I like about Malta? The fact that wherever I go, he used to live in the vicinity of Valletta. Wherever I travel, if I go to the three cities, if I stay in Valletta, if I go to Imlina, there is history everywhere. This island dates back to
and
these are things that we are surrounded with these monuments and with these buildings, and sometimes we don't appreciate the potential these buildings have to offer to international students. And when you think about it, I think it's true. I mean, like, for example, for the American students, going to Gigandia, for example.
Even going to Valletta must be overwhelming for them, to be fair. Exactly. So, they have nothing like it, so...
Yeah, and we're seeing an increase. Like another course that comes to mind that attracts American students is the Global Maritime Archaeology, which is a master's degree, which whenever we promote it in U.S., it attracts American students with... very minimal effort compared to other students, to other courses, and which goes to show that when you have a niche area to offer, which one can easily relate with the country, because global maritime archaeology, it can be related to Malta, no?
Absolutely.
When you have this combination, it sells out there. And I think this is what we have to focus on, especially at master's level, that we offer these type of courses where we can use Malta as a backdrop. The Malta, its culture, its language, its heritage. If you'll manage to do that, that would be a good selling point, a good recipe to attract international students to Malta.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week is Mario Casal, and we're talking about student recruitment. So these students that come from Korea and Japan, North America, North Africa, what other things do they study? We've talked about conflict resolution and maritime archaeology, which just sounds like the kind of thing you'd love to be able to say you did at a bar. But what are the other courses that seem to be popular?
Yes, I mean, first of all, let's distinguish between the two. So we have two different types of students coming from different education backgrounds or education systems, not backgrounds. You have students with 12 years of education. So, like for example, Chinese students would be 6 years in primary, mm-hmm. 5 years in secondary, and 1 year college.
Okay.
And then after that, they go to university. So for them, it's 12 years. Malta, we follow the British system. And since we follow the British system, Malta, we have 13 years of education before you go to university. So that means that a student coming from China at undergrad level, so this is why, let's speak about the undergrad and then we look at the postgrad. At undergrad level, a student coming to Malta, they would need to top up those 12 years with an additional year.
Okay.
Before they start attending university, one of our courses at university. So what we do is, this is not just us, this is the normal procedure, especially by UK institutions. We offer what we call a foundation year, during which the students will have to follow 60 credits, which is equivalent to, each credit, it's 5 to 7 hours of teaching, so that would be a maximum of 300 hours of teaching, 60 times 5, or a maximum of 420 hours of teaching.
Okay.
Obviously, they will have several tutorials additional to that, but in a sense, during this year, they will be under the supervision of the foundation school. They follow them closely, they give them individual attention and prepare them to join one of the courses.
But what does the foundation school teach? Is there like a year missing in their education, or there's a
yes.
foundation for the course that they're going to be taking?
Exactly. So the foundation school, they have different streams. So if a student is coming to here with the intention to study business, for example, one of our business degrees, that students would require a foundation year in business. Basically, what they teach is academic English for business. But not just that, they also give them a taster of the course, so that they eventually join, and they also prepare them because then, especially if we're mentioning business tends to attract a big numbers of students, so they will be just an individual student with so many other students. So if you're, for example, of a particular nationality, you may end up the only student from that particular country in a class of such a big number. So that year also helps them to mingle with the students around them, and then eventually they take the exams at the end of the year and they move forward. I mentioned business, but there is also a foundation year for humanities. Yeah. There is also a foundation year for science and technology, and there is also nowadays a stream for health sciences that would lead to nursing, basically, and also medicine. Medicine, and this is something important to mention. We attract students from Kuwait and Oman. We have a number of students studying here from these countries. They enter through the foundation school, mm-hmm. they study at the medicine foundation school, and then eventually they move to the medicine and surgery course, to the MD course. So those are the undergrad students. If a student, on the other hand, is coming from a country where there is 13 years of education, that students would move directly to the course if accepted, obviously.
And they have to have, obviously, a level of language.
Yes, yes, that is all. That is always required. If a student is coming from a country where the native language is not English, an IELTS or TOEFL or Cambridge is required at a particular score, because otherwise they won't be accepted, even if they are exceptional students. Mm-hmm. And we take that very seriously, because we do believe that if you have a student who is not able to communicate, or if she is not able to communicate in class, it will be difficult. It will be not just difficult for them to, for the students, because they end up struggling and trying to understand, but also for the other students around them.
And the lecturer as
and
well.
The lecturer as well. So that is very important as well. So, but if a student is coming from the EU where there are 13 years of education and the students obviously has the requirements, they would enter directly. At master's level, it's less complicated, to put it this way, because at master's level, if you are, for example, we've mentioned global maritime archaeology. I mean, to use the same example. If you have an archaeology degree, you will automatically qualify for the course.
Okay.
Obviously, the English would still be required, because that is important, unless you're not coming from US or UK or Australia, where the language of instruction, where the native language is English, and you will be accepted directly on this course. So at master's level, it's much easier, I would say, to recruit a student than at undergrad level. Obviously, for the commitment, it's shorter. For a master's, they come to Malta for a year. For an undergrad, if they're coming from a non-EU country with 12 years of education, it's a minimum of 4 years, because some courses are longer than that. And you will be surprised with the different mentalities of different nationalities. Like, for example, if the Indian students, we have learned that the Indian students, they want to come to Malta to study, but they don't see it as an opportunity, just an opportunity to get a degree, but it's an opportunity for their life,
okay,
to improve their life. So they leave India with the intention of not returning back. They come to Malta, they follow a degree, they finish the degree, they complete, and they take the exams, they pass the exams, and they try and work in Malta if there isn't a better opportunity for them in the mainland, in Europe mainland.
Yes.
So that is the Indian culture as we see it. I mean, they move on, to another country to improve their life, basically. The Chinese students, they want to go back. They miss their country.
It's such a culture shock, I imagine. So
it could be. And if you look at what's happening around us, like, for example, the British institutions. I mean, and this thing was huge, especially in the 2000s. What they were doing is what they call the transatlantic courses. So students, they will be 2 years in a Chinese institution. Uh-huh. Obviously, during those 3 years, they give them the foundation study units that they require, but they will be taught in Chinese.
Right.
Some of the lecturers will be flying from the UK institution to China every now and then. And in some cases, they also use translators, professional translators. At the end of the second year, they take the exams and they have to take English, the IELTS. If they pass the exams and the English exam, they move to UK for another year.
Right.
And they get a degree from the Chinese institution and from the UK institution, the concept of a dual degree. And for them, this is attractive for the Chinese, because they are studying abroad, and for them studying abroad means a lot, especially on their CV. Mm. And they're getting an English degree, but two-thirds of it was actually followed at home. They didn't leave home, you know?
Ah.
They were still in their comfort zone. And that's a model that sells in China. Obviously, This is based on research and experience.
I mean, and I suppose it's been happening for a few years now. So
yes. I mean, most of the universities, they still do it. I mean, COVID probably has interrupted all these efforts, but it's still going on. Yes.
Okay. So we're going to talk a bit more in another program, and I want to talk to you some more there about people leaving home to study and the validity of their qualifications once they've got them in various countries. So, but thank you for speaking to me for this first part of the program. That's Mario Casar, and I'm Monique Chambers on A Degree of Interest.